Hello and welcome to the third and final episode of our special podcast series, celebrating a decade of ISUP. We've met the driving force behind the organization and we've traced ISUP's evolution from just a concept to a community and a global force. Now we turn our attention to celebration and vision. What has ISUP achieved in these 10 years that we should pause to honor? What lessons have we learned? And most importantly, what comes next for a network that continues to grow in size, scope, and impact? Join us as Joanna reflects on key accomplishments, lifts up the stories that matters most, and shares her hopes and strategies for ISUP's next chapters. Joanna, as we continue our conversation, what does the 10-year milestone mean to you personally and for ISUP?
Hi, Goodman. Thanks again for having me back. 10 years is huge. It's a real amazing moment to take stock, to celebrate, and to say, right, what have we done well? What have we done badly? What can we learn from? And what do we want to achieve in the next 10 years? So it feels like a wonderful moment to have that reflection. For me personally, it's just blows me away how much ISUP has changed and evolved and how many people we now are. What a big group ISUP now is. And I'm delighted and really very moved by the membership endorsing what we try and do by joining us and being part of the community. So yeah, 10 years feels fantastic.
Sure. And I think, you know, it's wonderful to see something grow from just an idea and a thought and, you know, a conceived vision, actually being a community that contributes to how it evolves and grows. So that's really exciting. And so what sort of feedback are you receiving from the ISUP community?
So it's wonderful. The ISUP community give us great feedback and often guidance in terms of what they need more or less of, ideas, offerings of contributions to collaborate. So we talk to our community all the time, but we asked the staff to have a little look at more recent feedback that we've had, and we've had some amazing ones. Just recently, someone emailed us and said, I can't believe you are such a blessing that was hidden from me. I owe you it all. And somebody else said, thank you for the effort and diligence that you put into making our mission a reality, to make the work of our members as impactful, accessible, and effective as possible. Together we make a difference. I mean, what an amazing line to read.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's really great that people find that they're able to provide input, and hopefully the feedback that they give, the guidance they give, the ideas that they come up with for working together, hopefully they see them panning out in how ISUP takes forward discussions in this podcast in future and also on our webinar and knowledge share platforms. In terms of the lessons that we've learned in how ISUP has evolved, we probably touched on some of these themes in the second episode, but what leadership or organizational lessons would you say have emerged about building a global professional community?
A couple of things spring to mind when you ask me that, Goodman. One is about humility and meeting people with what we can offer. So I think often when we start out a relationship with anyone, an individual or a huge partner organization, I try to go with, this is what we can do. How can we help in what you're already doing? Because I would never want to assume that we know better than anyone else how to do something. So I think that that is something that is a very ISUP ethos, and I think is something that we keep learning from and hopefully offering to people. And I think it really has helped us build the relationships and the community that we have. The second thing that jumps to mind is about flexibility. And actually, what's interesting in how we've developed over the last 10 years is that we've become more structured and more flexible. So we've learned when it's important to have some structure, and when the structure is important is to help people do their work. So working with the national chapters, for example, we have a very structured central operation. The processes, the agreements, the wording, etc., is very structured, and that's constantly evolving based on what the national chapters need and how we can improve how we work with them. But at the same time, every national chapter is completely different. So we don't apply a structure to them in terms of you have to do this, this, and this. We try and scaffold them with some structures that can help them do their work and us to operate with them. But then we embrace the differences. So I think we are learning when it's important to be structured, when it's important to be flexible, and learning from our mistakes. I'm sure that we will continue to get things wrong and need to tweak things always in all of ISET's operations. But I think that for me is something that we've really become more organized around.
You know, idea about humility and making sure that you start with what you have to offer and learning from mistakes could really actually serve as general relationship advice. So maybe we're also ready to be married.
It's a sideline we haven't thought about.
I think, you know, what you've mentioned about recognizing and enhancing what members and partners already have to offer is really part so key to us transferring that messaging that we are collaborative, but also making sure that people feel valued and that they feel that what they have to offer actually matters and makes a difference. And that element of flexibility amidst the streamlined, impactful, but responsive structure, which I think ISAB Global definitely is. And importantly, allowing the local chapters to be able to adapt for local relevance. And they really get to shine when it comes to the global event, don't they? We really get to see and taste and experience and feel the local chapter, the local culture.
Absolutely. And we hope that they all shine in their local context and that we give enough spotlight to them because they really do shine and are incredibly important. And as we've said many times, just do things in their own way to their own strengths and to their own countries and memberships needs. So they are such an asset. It's really incredible.
So in terms of, you know, ISAB, we know we discussed now about flexibility and about having a structure, but one that's responsive. How would you say ISAB has adapted to evolving trends or crises? For example, you know, the virtual convening during COVID, the rise in synthetic drugs, emerging prevention needs. How is ISAB adapted to these?
So all of those things have had a huge impact on ISAB. And if I start with the pandemic, I think that was huge for ISAB, in part because we were already online. We already existed digitally. So it wasn't much of a pivot for us to embrace that side of things. When we went in, I'll give you one example. When we went into the pandemic, ISAB was delivering one webinar a month. So we would spend time developing the content, the relationships, the speakers, and we were delivering one webinar a month to a couple of hundred people. And then when the pandemic started, we thought, okay, then we're not holding in-person events. Let's really focus on this. And we started to deliver sometimes three or four webinars a week. And that channel was there already. So we hugely changed during the pandemic, but we could just build on what we already had. We didn't have to build new systems, new structures. And so we were at a real advantage. I mean, everyone started to work from home and the ISAB team has always worked from home. So we could build upon a lot of practices that we already had in place. And our webinars are the perfect example then of those other elements that you talk about, whether it's synthetic drugs trends or emerging needs of the workforce. We can package and have a webinar online within 3 weeks of something emerging. And the team are amazing at doing that based on what is out there. And I have to say, our speakers do that for us for free. Consistently, they show up and they are willing to share their knowledge, their know-how with the team, you know, with the community that is ISAB. And that's the perfect example of how we can be very flexible and pivot to whatever the needs are of our community. And it's very refreshing to see that that is then well received. In other elements, you know, perhaps other things that are not so digital, we have to be more considered. Like we talked at the end of the last episode about training, you know, we can't just launch that. We're trying to be very careful in how we develop and expand our training provision. But we are always listening and trying our best to be responsive. And I hope that for the most part, we are managing to do that.
That's great, Joanna. And, you know, definitely the increased frequency of the webinars, I think, has been really very successful. We've seen an amazing turnout and a great response and really meaningful engagement. And we really appreciate the ISAP community for that.
And when the pandemic stopped, the numbers didn't drop. People still want to receive that information and have it there and watch it back. And that was another sort of learning for us, that actually we did something in response to people's working conditions, but when their conditions changed again, it was still useful. So we've carried on.
Fantastic. So having developed this platform, which we now, you know, we've just demonstrated how it is also able to evolve responsively, where do you see ISAP headed over the next, say, 10 years? What are the new challenges and opportunities that you're seeing?
So we're seeing a real opportunity to broaden our community, that there are elements of the workforce that can be brought into the ISAP community that we're not currently trying to serve. So I think, for example, some of the supply control professions, they benefit from what we're doing, but we don't directly produce things that could be useful to them. And I think that we can expand to think about a broader community of ISAP membership when we are producing and developing our own work. So that will be really interesting to see how we can expand that community. I've said it on this podcast, I say it every time I present, but ISAP really is for everyone that is interested in or working in relation to this field. And most of our ISAP members don't wake up in the morning and think, I am only going to do a substance use related job today. Many of them do thousands of other things, but still have an impact upon substance use in what they are doing. So I think having that broader community in our minds will hopefully make what we're doing more useful to more people. I think carrying on the maximization of our national chapter's potential for impact is really important. See the growth of membership through them, because there is only so much we can do to tell people we're here. We rely greatly on the national chapters having those local relationships. And we can't be of use to anyone if people don't know that we exist and that we're free and that they can contribute and gain from the ISAP community. So I think that that is going to be really important to help us not only deliver through our national chapters, but grow our membership so that the audience that can benefit is significant and that it's worth doing what we're doing. We've talked about training and how important that is. And I've said it came from the members saying this, when training is available, this is really useful. We would like more. We would like this type. We would like it delivered in this way. And trying to respond to that is a huge job, but we want to do so. We already deliver some training, particularly at our events and through our national chapters. But to be able to grow that to support what our members are asking for is going to be a huge achievement, I think, and something that's very important for our next 10 years. And to keep building partnerships. Who are the other people that we should be working with, that we should be highlighting, that we should be amplifying what they're doing? Who are those people? How can we keep meeting them? How can we keep being of benefit to them, to then ultimately benefit our members, to then ultimately benefit the clients, the target group, the communities, the countries, the societies that are, you know, ultimately our end user, our end goal?
That's awesome. And I think, you know, it's really about, in terms of maximizing national chapter impact, I think what we certainly can do is encourage our ISAP membership to engage with their national chapter, to find out what locally appropriate resources they might have, and to find ways to participate and contribute and access sort of offerings that are offered through the national chapter. So I think we can certainly suggest to the ISAP community that they do that. And in terms of training offerings, I think it's wonderful to see the interest amongst the ISAP community for self-advancement, because people reach out to us all the time. They want to know, you know, what's required for me to achieve an ICAP certification? What's required for me to be, you know, a reliable provider in prevention? You know, our former leader, Jeff Lee, was really at pains to impress upon the importance of receiving appropriate training in prevention before you can go out and deliver those interventions. So that's really encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, because ICEP wants to be flexible and meet the needs of people out there, when we look at something like training, we're not trying to only look at it in the traditional sort of long approach. You know, I'm always mindful that one of our most popular webinar series is the motivational interviewing one, which is 3 or 4 hour-long, hour and a half webinars. So it's about saying, okay, this training is here. If you want to do everything from A to B, you know, to Z in this particular topic, but also maybe we're going to spend half a day on one small element so that there is that flexibility so that everybody can take the training, whether their employer lets them take 8 weeks of professional development or 8 hours.
Absolutely. So some flexibility and hopefully some impactful skills transfer in the process. And hopefully we can extend that to, you know, this broader community that we're targeting. You know, you mentioned, you know, the supply reduction professionals. How, in your view, or in your vision rather, will ICEP deepen the impact, whether it's by broadening the membership or by strengthening the partnerships or by evolving the training model? So what's the strategy for deepening impact?
Can I answer all three?
Call you gifts, of course.
It is all three. That's the easy way of answering it. But they all do very different things. Like I talked about the national chapters helping us grow membership, there might be a provision on ICEP that we started 10 years ago that is not new. It's not, you know, it's constantly there and we're working on it, but it's not like a new flashy thing that we're talking about all the time. That might be the really important thing, the piece of somebody's professionalization puzzle. And so it's about making sure people know we're here, people know what we have, and they are using those resources that are hopefully easily accessible to them. So the broadening membership is just about making what we are doing, but also have done over the years, as useful as possible. So that, I think, is really important to continue to grow the membership, to continue to hear from our membership and consult with them to listen to what they need. Because in some places, maybe there isn't anyone else that they can ask for tools or direction for their career development. So that is very important. And it's not just a marketing goal. It's a really important part of making us worthwhile. Then I think the strengthening partnerships ties in again, because what we do is provide people signposting to what's already out there. If something emerges that their members need, say a certain amount of knowledge on synthetic drugs and how they're moving around the globe, for example, ICEP wouldn't necessarily have to do that piece of research ourselves. We would connect with the person who is already doing it and is already doing it well. So those partnerships benefit our membership, but also we hope we can amplify for our partners what they're already doing. So that continues to be really important, as well as admitting we don't know everything and we're not the experts in everything, but this is the person that maybe would be. And yes, the training models that are evolving, as we've said, this is something that we're really focusing on now because we've listened to our members and we're doing that. But who knows what will be around the corner, and having that ear open to what's needed and trying to maximize the resources that ICEP has to respond to that is probably the most important thing that we have to keep in mind over the next 10 years so that we don't get stuck in our ways or in our beliefs of what's important and what's best and actually can be as responsive as possible.
I think what's great is that ICEP already has evidence of how ICEP can be responsive and how ICEP can evolve to meet the challenge. And so we have clear evidence of what works in that space and what achieves success and supports the ICEP membership. In your mind, though, what are the strategic priorities that are perhaps top of mind for you?
The priorities at this point definitely focus around sort of consolidating where we are. So I feel like we've done so much growth and we have expanded to a point that it's now about making sure we reinforce what we have. As I said, there's some things that are old that we might not be talking about all the time that can be useful to people. So just consolidating our messaging. Digital is always been a priority and I think will always continue to be, because that's how our voice comes through. So I think having that in our mind, the digital reach as a priority with the, and I don't know how to say it, I think I'm being repetitive, but with that promotion of what there is so that people really understand what tools there are that can be useful to them in their day-to-day work.
That's great. And I think, you know, a lot of folks will be hearing the story, Joanna, and they'll be inspired. So for professionals who are inspired by your journey, by ISOP's journey, how can they get involved in the space? How can they contribute to their local national chapters? How can they access training, ICAP certification? How do they go about submitting resources for knowledge share? So how do they get involved? They want to get involved.
I really hope people do hear this and want to get involved. And I would say the best starting point is our website, isop.net. And there, those digital tools that you've listed are all available. People can submit. They can showcase themselves and their own work. People want to learn from each other. So hearing those stories of, we tried this and it failed, or we tried this and it was brilliant, is so useful for somebody else. So I would say, look at the knowledge share, learn from it, but also share to it so that what you're doing can help your fellow professional in whatever the realm of our community you might work in. Go back through our library of webinars, because there are so many topics covered in there and they are short bite-sized ways to consume the information. This wonderful podcast, follow and listen to that. I think people can really enjoy that in a, consuming the knowledge in a different way. Tell their networks, their colleagues, their community that ISOP exists so that we can keep having that benefit to people as the workforce grows, changes, evolves, and keep telling us what you need. So we're on social platforms. We're pretty extensive there in our communications on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn in particular, and X. So people can talk to us on those. They can email us, come to the events and talk to us. So there's lots of ways that people can share in this community, and we hope that they continue to be of use.
Awesome. Joanna, you're nearly off the hook. One final question for you. What message would you like to send to the global community of ISOP as ISOP enters its second decade?
That they are fantastic. To be very British, they are brilliant at what they are doing. That the fact that they've joined ISOP just shows so much commitment to wanting to learn and continue their own growth. We could not do what we do without our members, without our partners. We're a community of volunteers, basically. You know, there's so many people contributing things out of the goodness of their own hearts. And I think I'm so grateful and want to say thank you on behalf of all of the ISOP team. It's not just me, obviously. That's very important that we are a group that believe very strongly in what we're doing and love what we do and want to carry on being useful. So I think that is my message, that you're doing such a good job, and it's so important, the job that you are doing, that we recognize that, we appreciate it, and we hope that we can enhance it and continue to do so.
Yeah, yeah. Joanna, thank you for your time. It's been so much fun. Thank you. And so everyone, that brings us to the end of this special three-part series celebrating a decade of ISOP. We've had the privilege of learning about Joanna Travis-Roberts' journey, the founding and evolution of ISOP, the vision shaping its future. Across every episode, one message has come through clearly, that this is a community built on collaboration, guided by evidence, and driven by the belief that together we can build better responses to substance use around the world. Whether you're a practitioner, policymaker, researcher, or advocate, there's a place for you in this global movement. Visit ISOP.net to join, connect, and contribute. Thank you for listening and for being a part of ISOP's journey into the next decade of impact.